Welcome back, Richard. It's good to see you this morning.
Good morning. Don't forget,
Yeah.
spring ahead.
That's right. Time changes. Time changes
Time
tonight
changes this weekend.
or this weekend. Yeah, it's set on Saturday night. So hopefully, well, this podcast will drop on Sunday. So hopefully you all changed your clocks so that you're waking up on time to make it to church or wherever else you're going this morning. And you get there on time.
And plan your day. I hope you planned your day
Yeah.
because you'll lose an hour
That's
of
right.
sleep. Just what everybody needs, have a little less sleep, you know.
That's
So,
right.
yeah.
That's right.
So, yeah, but don't forget those clocks. This is the weekend for that. So,
Absolutely. So today
okay.
we're going to talk about a topic that I think I don't know that we've ever talked about this topic before. I
I don't
think.
think we have. I was thinking about it, and we probably have mentioned it in passing, but never really focused on it.
Right. And that is the topic of yelling. You know,
Parent yelling. Yes.
yeah, we, you know, whether you're in the grocery store, sometimes when you're just walking down the road, you hear parents just going at it, yelling and just going at their kids. Sometimes going at each other, just two adults talking, we'll start yelling at each other. But we're going to talk about yelling, and especially as it relates to parents yelling at their kids.
Right. Yeah. And one of the things we know, because we hear this every day, this is one of those things we hear about every day. Parents will admit, at least in the privacy of their home or in a therapeutic setting, that they do yell. But as soon as they tell you that, they always regret it. Invariably they say, I always feel terrible that I'm yelling at my kids. But then the next thing they do immediately is they justify
Right.
it. But he's on, but you know, I was tired. I was so tired of dealing with it. Or he triggers me.
Yeah.
That he knows what to say. Or my favorite, I've told you 1,000 times not to do. You know, I'm tired of telling him. I've
Yeah.
told him 1,000 times. And then there's the have to's. You know, the other reason that yelling occurs is because you have to be in the car to get to school on time. You have to be at the bus stop. You have to have your uniform on. And these have to's also trigger yelling. And of course, you're on my last nerve. She's on my last nerve. And so I yell. So we regret doing it on the one hand, but we justify it on the other. Okay. And so we thought, well, let's take a closer look at this thing.
Right. So I guess the first thing we should do is just differentiate between the different some of the
Right.
reasons why we raise our voice. You know, obviously there are the some of the appropriate times. You know,
Yeah.
we'll yell or raise our voice to avoid danger. You know, if your kid's about to run into the road or something, you might yell, you know, stop, you know, just to keep them safe, to keep them from getting hurt in some way. Similarly, you know, we raise our voice when we need to get their attention to let them know, hey, I'm being serious right now.
Bernie, I know your mother. And there must have been some coded language that she had that signaled to you that that you needed to pay attention right now.
You could tell. There was no doubt.
When I heard Richard Michael, I knew that we were at another level of conversation. Because Richard Michael meant I needed to listen very carefully about what was to happen.
Yeah, there's only a few times when your parents use your full name.
Right.
And at any of those times, it's serious.
Never good. And never good. Richard Michael was never followed by anything good.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, and the third reason is, of course, yelling out of anger or yelling out of frustration with something involving your child, something that's going on, that's happening that is causing you some frustration or some anger, and you're yelling, perhaps to emphasize the point, perhaps to try to get your point across, but you're yelling nonetheless, and it is an emotional yelling. It is a yelling out of those emotions that are sometimes getting a little bit out of control.
Yeah, there's an emotion attached. It's anger, it's rage. And that's the kind of yelling we want to talk about. The kind of yelling, as this author puts it, where you go from rational parent to screaming psychopath, you know, and you really do. I mean, you really lose control. So it's an emotional reaction. In the animal kingdom, we talk about two kinds of aggression, predatory aggression and defensive aggression. And in predatory aggression, it's the kind of thing that an animal does to eat. You know, you have this picture of a lion attacking a zebra or a wildebeest. There's nothing emotional about that. That's a very calculated, non-emotional event. But if an animal is defending itself or defending its young, that's an emotional attack. Okay. So, and here we're talking about this second kind of emotional anger that has its roots in anger and rage. And that's the kind of yelling we want to talk about today. It's not raising your voice, it's not signifying danger. This is the yelling that we all do. We most of us do it. We admit to it. But that's the kind of yelling that very hot emotional yelling, where we say things that we later regret.
And I think it's the reason that we regret it is because we later realize that it's out of emotion and that we allowed our emotion to kind of get the better of us at that time. But the vast majority, 90% of us admit to yelling sometimes. And so the reality is that yelling isn't even effective, really. Most of the time, I don't have a specific statistic for this because I don't know how in the world we would get a specific statistic about this, but very often parents who yell tend to later complain about their kids yelling. They'll later compare the, complain that their kids yell back at them or will yell at their siblings or will yell at their friends. And so what we're talking about is modeling. The parents have modeled that when you're angry or when you're upset with someone, you yell at them. And so then the child yells at them, at other people.
That's what we're teaching, right? No, it's yelling. Someone raised the issue: is it the new spanking? You know, we tell parents, let's try not to hit because you're modeling hitting, you know, and you don't also, you know, this is still a form of harsh discipline. I mean, if you want to talk about how do you, what's the best way to discipline your children, you don't want to resort to these very harsh measures, these harsh disciplinary measures. Well, yelling, especially the yelling out of anger and rage, is a form of harsh discipline. So, A, you don't want to model it, but B, you want to remember that it is a form of harsh discipline. It's probably not what you want to do with your children.
Absolutely. And kids have a more sensitive nervous system. And and many parents can relate to this. How many times have you had a situation where you're talking to your kid and maybe you start to raise your voice a little bit and maybe not, but your child says that you're yelling at them and you're not yelling at them, but they say that you're yelling at them. And they probably, we have to assume that they truly believe that you're yelling at them. And it's because they have somewhat of a nervous, a more sensitive nervous system. And so they are, receiving that information at a much greater level, perhaps than you intend. And for that reason, especially for kids, yelling or that tendency to, present that way comes across as very aggressive and intimidating. Imagine this person who's like two or three times your size, yelling at you, and oftentimes yelling comes along with pointing and leaning towards them and, getting into their space. Imagine a person that much bigger than you doing that to you. It is very intimidating and comes across as aggressive.
I hadn't thought about that. The children have more sensitive nervous systems, but they really do. I mean, it's a developing nervous system. It's not finished yet. It'd be like opening the oven before the cake is finished. You know, you have to wait. They do have a more sensitive nervous system, and they do say, "Why are you yelling?" And we're not yet, we don't perceive it as yelling, but in there more sensitive, because not only is it a louder voice coming at you much faster, but there's also an accompanying facial expression that says to the child, I'm angry. You may not think you're doing that, but when you start yelling, when you start this emotional raising your voice, it's also accompanied by a matching facial expression, which is, I am angry with you right now. And the human brain will see that facial expression and that tone of voice as a threat. And then you start moving to, the child will start moving to fight or flight. You know, they'll run away,
Absolutely.
they'll fight back.
Absolutely. So it does scare them. Now, being scared does not necessarily lead to change. You know, just because you're scared of something doesn't mean that you're going to need to change. But I think more importantly is that when they're scared, they're turning it off. They're not processing the information that you're sharing. And so they aren't really learning anything at that time. And so, you know, we're not really accomplishing what we think or hope to accomplish. And
That's right.
that is, they're not gaining an understanding as to why you're angry, why that's what happened was a problem. And so it's not going to lead to any change.
Right. And you know, we'll say to parents, you know, children, you can frighten them with your voice and with your posture and with your facial expression. But just because they're frightened, just because they're afraid of you, doesn't mean that it's going to change their behavior. You've accomplished one thing, that they're afraid of you. And many times parents will say, well, I want my kids to be a little bit afraid of me. We don't disagree, but we want them to be afraid for the right reason. And a better reason would be that I'm going to take something away, or I'm going to make your life more difficult if you don't do as I ask you to do. I don't want them to just be afraid of you. I want them to be afraid. I want them to do all they can to avoid the consequences of their behavior, but not to be afraid of you as a person.
Because we want kids to follow rules and meet expectations because it's important to follow rules and meet expectations, not because they're afraid that they're going to get yelled at and afraid of the consequences. We want them to understand why it's important to do things, not how to avoid consequences. And so trying to stay calm. Now, again, we fully recognize that in the heat of the moment, when the things are happening, it is hard to do some of the calming strategies that we all know, right? We know about counting to 10 and taking deep breaths and those kinds of things. But it's really hard to do that in the heat of the moment. And
That's
so,
right.
but so parents, we have to work hard to develop that skill of being able to say, okay, I need to step away for a second because I'm about to lose control. And I need to collect myself a little bit.
Right. I love it when I talk to parents, or when I have conversations with myself, that the calming strategies don't really work in the heat of the, once a parent gets triggered. You know, once you get to that point where you've said 1,000 times, finish your breakfast or get your backpack or put your shoes on, you feel yourself getting more emotionally aroused, the arousal mechanisms going up. It's very hard to get yourself back under control. So the many parents will say, well, those calming strategies don't work. And I would say, yeah, they probably don't. So what you have to do is you have to do all you can to avoid those situations where you're going to be triggered. I mean, you know how difficult mornings are. We know how difficult bedtime is. And so you have to do all you can to structure the situation so that you don't get triggered. Don't set yourself up to be triggered. And you can avoid a lot of these things. Because you're right, the calming strategies don't work once you start to get angry.
Once you get to that point, it's really difficult to do. So, yeah, the article that we're kind of pulling this from, it's a really good article, and there'll be a link in the show notes. But they present 10 things to do, to try to help you, deal with some of these issues instead of yelling. You're right. The first one is knowing your triggers and avoiding what you can. And if you know that, you're going to get angry because if you take your kids to the store after school on your way home, you know that your kids are going to ask for toys or ask for candy or something like that, and then that just sets you off. Don't go to the store after school. Find a
Right.
different way, a different time. Come up with a different strategy and avoid that kind of situation.
Right.
It's not parents have to kind of give up this idea that, well, I'm giving in to my kids, or I'm changing, for them. And no, you're recognizing what a problem, what's a problem, and you're avoiding that problem. You're dealing with that problem. It's not giving in to your kids, or letting them win or anything like that. It's not that kind of contest. You're recognizing what is difficult for you to deal with, and you're making a decision to avoid that.
Yeah, most parents come in and they say, "Well, what can I do about my child's behavior? How can I punish, or what's a consequence?" Consequences is the C of A, B, C. And what we're saying is, let's move it over to A. Let's create a situation where you're less likely to be triggered. We talk about mornings being difficult, and parents say, "Well, you might have to get up 30 minutes earlier. I mean, if you can't get the job done in 45 minutes, then give yourself another 50, try 60 minutes, or try 75 minutes. Give all the family members enough time to get the job done. Don't try to squeeze a 40-minute job into 25 minutes, because you're obviously going to run into trouble. So set the stage for success, and you'll avoid the triggers, and you'll avoid that need to use calming strategies."
It's so funny because some parents will, they get so angry because their kids will go in and like sneak snacks out of the pantry or something. And so, my first recommendation is always, okay, just don't have those snacks in the
Get
house.
rid of them.
And they'll say, well, I'm not gonna, I like those snacks too. And, the other kids like them, and they don't do it. So, why should everybody else not get to have? So what you're saying is that you'd rather have that happen than, to find a different kind of snack, or find a different way to store the snacks, or, you're so insistent on doing it the way that you want to do it that you're just introducing yourself to the problem. And so
Right, you're
we have to be
inviting.
more flexible.
Yeah, you're leaving the door open for trouble. I mean, just, don't have the snacks. I mean, these are really easy problems to solve.
Now, the second strategy is, give warnings. And I love this recommendation because I encourage parents to do it all the time. If you're going into the store and you just need to run in to get, milk and bread, tell them ahead of time, hey, look, we're going in and we're getting milk and bread. We're not looking at any toys. We're not getting any candy. Don't even ask. And, parents, I know you say that, and you're going to say, I say that all the time, and they still ask. Okay. But know that they're going to ask, know that they're going to do it, and then you can ignore it. You can move on, but go through the self-checkout because usually around the self-checkout there's not as many candy opportunities
Oh,
like
that's
that.
right.
But just go through the self-checkout and just get in and out as quickly as you can, and don't give in to that. So, but give those warnings ahead of time to give them a chance to prevent it from happening.
All right. I like this next one. Take a parent time out. Just remove yourself. It's legal to remove yourself from the situation, to give yourself to, but you've got to get away from the triggers. You have to get away from the whining. You have to get away from the, you got to remove yourself. Take a time out. That will give you enough time to sort of bring your nervous system back together, so that you can go back into the situation with a calmer attitude.
Yeah, I think that that's another one that parents tend to feel as though it's them giving in to the kid.
Correct.
Well,
That's
no,
right.
if I walk away, then they're going to think it's okay that what they did is okay. No, you're going to deal with the issue. You're going to deal with the problem. You're just not going to do it when you're so emotional, when you're so revved up, and you need to go calm down a little bit, get better control so that you can communicate better in a way that they're going to hear you. Because they're not going to hear you when you're yelling.
Because I'm going to skip ahead, but don't try to teach when you're angry. I mean, that's the worst possible time to teach, and the worst possible time to lecture. I wish we had an anti-lecturing law in this country, where you just can't lecture your kids. Okay, just stop lecturing them. Okay, step back. When you're angry, you're not going to teach, and the lecture is just going to go in one ear and out the other. You know all that. What you can do And we would, I wasn't sure about this one when I was reading them, but it says post and model a yes list of alternatives. One of the things you might do with older children, older elementary school kids, even third and fourth graders, is to sit down and say, okay, kids, I don't want to yell. You don't want me to yell. What else can we do? What else can I do? And then post those on the refrigerator so that the whole family learns together some alternatives to yelling, and you work on it as a family.
Yeah, I will often ask kids that in sessions. I'll say, okay, we don't like it when mom does this, or we don't like it when dad does that. What can they do instead that's going to get the message to you that this is a problem or that you need to change something? A lot of kids will have a hard time coming up with something, but some kids come up with a great idea. Some kids will, I've had, elementary school and like middle school kids say, you know what, if they just put their hand up and to let me know that to stop, then I know that's like a visual cue and that lets me know that I need to stop. And that makes sense. And so the parents can use that strategy. So yeah, I think it's a good idea. Sometimes you have to get creative. You have to be realistic, some kids will say, well, they should just let me do what I want to do. Okay, well, that's not gonna work. But when you can come up with realistic strategies, I think that's a great thing to have a list of alternatives.
Yeah, bring the child, bring your kids into the problem-solving process. Let them generate some solutions. Then they have some ownership of the whole situation.
I think the next one is, we have to be mindful. And one of the things we did in our parenting book is we emphasized what is typical behavior. What is typically expected at different developmental stages? You know what? Teenagers are going to push limits. They're going to test your patience. They're going to, test boundaries, and they're going to try things that you never thought that they would try before, that they had never even explored before. But if you know what typical behavior, typical expectations are at different ages, it's a little bit easier to accept the fact that they happen. Everybody knows that 2-year-olds have temper tantrums. Okay. So it's a little bit easier, at least, maybe it's just a little bit easier to recognize that, okay, he's 2 and he's having a tantrum. Okay. So we can move on. We can move on to something else. When you recognize and you know what normal behavior is, then maybe we can step back and not yell so much and not get so upset, because why are we yelling about something that's typical? Why are we yelling about something that is a normal part of development?
Yeah, I can tell you that most teenagers, they don't take a class for this, but I can tell you that most teenagers, when you ask them to do something, they're going to roll their eyes or click their tongue or make you feel stupid. It just is part of the deal. Don't waste a lot of energy. That's an age appropriate, not a desirable behavior, but it's an age appropriate behavior, just like a temper tantrum, okay? It's an age-appropriate behavior that most kids are probably going to experiment with cigarettes, alcohol, and drugs. They're at least going to try it. Don't lose your mind over that. It's a perfectly normal age-appropriate behavior. The overwhelming percentage of children never go on to even smoke cigarettes or to use. Most don't. So those are normal teenage behaviors. And don't start yelling and getting all worked up about normal behavior.
Yeah, I like your idea about eye rolling and that
Oh, God.
you tell your kid, okay, hey, you need to go take the trash out, and
Oh,
you're so
God.
upset about that. It's like,
Oh, God.
and all I ever think about is, when if my wife or someone mentions, hey, will you go take the trash out, I think the same thing. Like, there's something in my mind that goes, oh. Now I hopefully do a good enough job of masking that and holding that in so it doesn't come out. But kids aren't, they don't have experience with that yet. But
No.
we all feel that way when we're told to do something that we're not really enthusiastic about doing. So why yell and get so upset about that when it's like, yeah, I know, I hate taking the trash out too, but just take it out and then you can come back in and get back to what you're doing.
No, I think I'll do it later. I'll do
Yeah.
it later. When we were in a class, We were in a class one time, and the teacher made a, actually, it was a priest. He made a very good comparison. He said, "You know, the brain surgeon is in charge of the operating room and is the dictator and has absolute authority in the operating room. But when he gets home, he still has to take out the trash."
Yeah.
I mean, but of course you're going to get eye rolling and tongue clicking and I'll do it later. And they have no intention of doing it later. They're just, kicking the can down the road. Don't get worked up about that stuff. It is absolutely normal behavior. You're going to work through it. You'll get through it. But don't start yelling because of that. Use some other approaches.
Yeah, because I like the I just like the responsive, I don't like doing it either, but we got to get it done. We don't want the trash piling up in the house.
Right.
The next one is to be proactive,
Right.
and being proactive for yourself. When you again, especially recognizing when you're going into a situation where there's a likelihood. I think especially about, one of the increased risks of times when we're at an increased risk of yelling is, if you've had a bad day at work yourself, if you're really stressed out. If you're really stressed out already, if you're tired, if you're hungry, we're adults. Please recognize that and recognize that, you know what? It's going to be much easier for me to get upset right now because I'm tired, I'm hungry, I've had a long day, it's been a rough day or whatever. And so be proactive and start doing something ahead of time to kind of calm that down before you're even engaging or trying to do anything with your kids. You
Right.
got to think ahead to prevent that for yourself.
Right. And part of that is managing your expectations. Some kids are very easy and very compliant, and some kids are not easy or compliant. Okay. So you have to know the child you're dealing with. The other thing is, if you want your child to clean her room, his or her room, but then so the child does it at some level, and then you go in and say, well, it wasn't done to my satisfaction. Now you're headed down a slippery slope because the first step is to get the child engaged in the process. Over time, you can refine their room cleaning skills. So manage your own expectations. Don't expect that they're going to get it right the first or second time they do it. They will learn how to do it over time. Manage your expectations. Make sure they're realistic. Make sure you're asking your child to do something that is age appropriate.
And because what easily happens in those situations is it shifts to becoming something about you and not about your kid. And there are many times that we will yell at our kids, but it's all about us. It's about what they're doing to me, what I feel or what I want or what I need. And it has nothing really to do with what your kid's doing. Really just about you. And again, this requires some insight, and sometimes this requires sometimes even some therapeutic work to help you get to that point where you can recognize, okay, this is a me issue. This isn't a him issue. The way that him putting his shoes over there really is just fine. I want them over here, and for whatever reason, but he always puts them over there because it's, but they're out of the way. They're put away. It's like, okay, what is about you and what is about really about a problem with your kid, and figure that out and plan ahead.
And last but not least, and please, please do this. Once you have done all that yelling and you feel bad, it's okay to apologize to your children. You don't have to grovel, but you at least have to apologize. Say, look, sorry I lost it. I'm going to work harder. Because once again, you're modeling the behavior that you want. You want your children to apologize to you. The quickest way for that to happen is for you to model that behavior. And you model it by apologizing to them.
And
Power
this
to the
is not,
future.
and just so we're clear, this is, I'm going to give you an example of what is not the model that you want to do. You do not want to say it like, Richard, I'm sorry that I got angry and I yelled. But if you would just listen to me the first time, then, I wouldn't do that. Whoa,
No buts.
you just took away the whole apology and you made it back about how bad the kid is or how what he did wrong. What you say instead of, Richard, I'm sorry that I yelled at you. I'm going to try to work and figure out a different way to let you know when I need you to do something different or when I'm unhappy about something. I'm going to work, keep working to find a better way to communicate that to you without having to yell.
Right. Yeah, it's
Okay.
about you. It's about don't turn it around and say, but if you hadn't done that, but if you had done what I asked you to do, there's no but here, okay? That you can put an and in, and I will work harder, and I shouldn't have lost my temper, and okay to do and leave out the buts.
Just imagine how you would feel if your partner said something like that to you. Because if your partner said, "Hey, honey, I'm sorry that I got upset last night, but if you would have done the dishes as I asked you to, then I wouldn't have had to yell at you." That doesn't go over very well with partners, and it doesn't go over very well with our kids either.
And that's right. That's right. It's the same with your children.
Yeah. All right. So folks, work on kind of stepping back from yelling, just as we are working from to with stepping back from spanking and some of these other, harsh punishments. We want to discipline kids. We want to teach them right from wrong. We want to teach them what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. But teaching is the operative word there. We want to teach them, not punish them, not demean them, not scare them. We want to teach them, and to teach them, we have to keep our cool. And we have to communicate effectively, what those expectations are and how they can meet them. We need to step back from all that yelling.
Exactly.
Yep. All right. Well, that is it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.